The Evan Red Snowboard Podcast is presented by Vans. Season 7 of Evan Red is sponsored by Wired Snowboards, The Boardroom Snowboard Shop, Anon Optics, Time Bomb Trading, the Canadian distributor of Dragon 32, Stance, and Sandbox, plus way more, and Tribute Board Shop in Nelson, BC. The Boardroom Snowboard Shop presents the Grouse Park's season opener gathering this Friday, 6 to 9 p.m. in the Cut Park. It's not a contest, it's not a rail jam, it's an event to promote fun and inclusivity for the local park riders. The Boardroom holiday hours have kicked in, so you can shop for the perfect holiday gifts on your schedule. Whether you're buying a complete setup for yourself or stocking stuffers for your family, the Boardroom's got you covered with the best selection of the best priced snowboarding hard goods, soft goods, and accessories anywhere. Shop at one of Boardroom's three locations in Vancouver or North Van, or order online at boardroomshop.ca. Support also comes from Mount Seymour, Grouse Mountain, New Greens, GoPro, and Volcom Outerwear. Thanks to everyone who supports the show. Keir Dillon is a legendary pro snowboarder whose career on the Burton team should probably be the main focus of this interview. However, Keir and I go all over the place in this one. We do start at the beginning, where Keir began his journey as a snowboarder.
I grew up in Pennsylvania, like an hour west of New York City. Middle of nowhere, sticks, kind of, you know, rivers and cliff jumping and just, you know, all little fun, dumb stuff as a kid. And I think I was 11. My dad was a ski bum. I had skied a bunch growing up. My parents were friends with the people that owned the mountains, so we were able to get free season passes.
Wow.
And, night skiing, and basically it's like your babysitter, right? Your mom would drive you over, drop you off, know that you're somewhat safe. You know, ski patrol would keep you in check. And, just parlayed, you know, skateboarding into, you know, winter snowboarding.
Yeah. So how young of a kid are you when you start?
I was 11. And, still skied and snowboarded. I mean, back then it was like Thursday nights. You could go and, you know, it was like post where you had to take the test, but it was still Thursday nights. One trail, right? And then then each year got a little better, a little more trails. But they blew piles of snow, maybe throw you a shovel. You're a kid, yeah, right? You're 13 years old. You care less. I mean, yeah. We had skateboard decks with no trucks on it in our backyard sliding down. Totally. So for us, it was all good.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? The last guest, Emmanuel Krebs, he was talking about those snow piles. Mm-hmm. And how, like, the very first, I think he said the first ad for limited snowboards was on one of those mounds. You know, like, they had the boards. It was, like, early season. There's no snow anywhere. And you go, you dig the side hit on the mound.
I mean, that was everything, though, right? Like, I think back to, like, seventh year sick video from back in the day. Or like, Daniel Frank video parts at, like, Mount Hood, Oregon, which were, like, curb cuts, you know, on the lanes up there. It was, like, totally. You filled this whole part in, like, four runs.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was, I mean, that was... I appreciated in looking back, like, now you have to kind of be in an academy, or you have to, like, move to Mammoth or, like, Park City or someplace, where back then you could literally be from some ghetto mountain on the East Coast because it wasn't that much better out here. I mean, the free riding was, but as far as, like, Parks and Pipe, kind of all the same. Yeah.
Parks back in the day, like, if you had a solid ice park, it was the same feature every day. You didn't have 10 million people hitting it. You were set up. That's what a lot of people came out of the East.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, especially pipe riders. And I mean, when I first started, I was racing gates, right? So I was like on that precipice of, like, you know, like, maybe racing's going to be the path to actually making this happen. And I connected with Peter Bauer on Instagram, and I was just like, dude, I still have your, like, 149, you know, like, PJ in my garage.
Come on. That's awesome.
But yeah, I mean, that was the time period, right?
Yeah. Did you ride with Seth Westcott?
A little bit, yeah.
He was around your era there?
Yeah, I mean, now it's back when he rode pipe. And then even border cross. I used to race border cross, you know, like border battles and stuff. And
I didn't know you did that.
Yeah. I mean, back then you just do everything.
Yeah.
Whatever, right? It's like, you're like, what am I not going to go do it? I mean, it's whatever.
So what's the first board? What is an 11-year-old Keir Dillon ride?
I got a 135 Kemper Kid.
Oh, the best.
Yeah.
Awesome.
My parents were divorced. Gnarly divorce. My dad hated my mom, and my mom's like, you'll never snowboard. So my dad, of course, got me a snowboard. And
Is that true?
Yeah, 100%, right? And it was kind of like awesome, which is great because I wanted Dina Star skis when I was young and he got me like some Rosnoff Stratus or something. I was so pissed.
Yeah. So he redeemed himself
with the Kemper kid. Yeah.
What bindings go on that?
It was the Kemper bindings.
Like the blue plastic on black or?
They were, I think they're white, pink, and blue.
Yeah, white, pink, blue.
Yeah, with the third strap.
I had those. Yeah, and you take the third strap off right away. Right away. You put that on your, I mean, with your kid boots, it would be like a hard boot.
Totally. I mean, I had duck boots, right? That was the beginning.
Yeah.
You know? And then I think I had airwalk boots eventually, like 50-pound airwalk boots.
Yeah.
And I think he bought it at the Army-Navy store, because then I got the Kemper Rampage after that.
Wow.
And then
you stayed Kemper for a couple of years.
Then Mistral.
Those were badass. Oh, what Mistral did you have?
153, 151. Had like some crazy like.
Yeah, that's the George Pappas. I'm talking to George in Denver this week. Yeah. That board was awesome. I rode that board.
Yeah.
It's fun. It was actually a modern board.
No, like, totally.
It had a good side cut.
Had the good P-Tex on the bottom, good like P-Tex. The all blacks. You could like,
yeah,
hopefully go fast.
That's super sick, dude. So when do you start competing? You start competing pretty young?
Yeah, I mean, competing is like a real loose term, right? It was like this guy, Tony Lincoln, awesome human. I mean, helped basically spread snowboarding in the Mid-Atlantic area. You know, we had our USASA, you know, competitions and all the local mountains. And luckily there was a older crew that we would BMX with and skateboard with. They were all probably 10 years older than us. But during that time period, if you snowboarded, skateboarded, or BMX, it was like you had maybe five people in your whole town. Yeah. And if they were younger, like whatever. But it worked for us because our parents were like, cool. Like, oh yeah, Evan, he's a, you know, trustworthy guy. Sure, he can go to Vermont with them. So
right.
It was like this perfect scenario. If we had like some mentors and older people that were really there for us. And like, I mean, all the dumb stuff of like training gates and how do you prepare for a contest and, you know, sleeping in your car and not dying and... You know, all the stuff you need an older person to help you with.
What's the first sponsor? Who picks you up?
It was Burton. Actually had a, we watched the Jake Burton film the other night with Annie Latz from Nixon and Mike Hofer, who was my Burton rep. And we were talking about it. I think it was 15 or 14. It was like a snowboard contest. I think it was a mogul contest even. I was like, went up to him like, you're going to sponsor me next year. Super cocky kid. He's just like, oh, really? Like,
come okay. on.
And yeah, he did. And,
I love that. That's then, so awesome.
Yeah, he helped me with like throughout my whole career, whether it was, you know, getting on Arnett, getting a deal with Burton. I mean, just even till recently helping me with my life. So,
wow,
like a 20-year plus relationship, 30-year, I guess.
And that kid, where does that gusto come from?
I don't know. I think coming from somewhat nothing, and then just the spirit of our sport was just like it was very countercultural. With respect, but still, like, everything was always earned. So it's just, I don't know, free spirit, right?
Totally. Total free spirit. So the Burton days, you get on with the rep as a rep rider. You're young. What kind of board you riding? What would that be?
I had the... So that was the year that the Joyride Filch came out. Like, the super sick, like, purple top.
47.
Yeah, 47. Just, like,
yeah, epic. Thing was epic.
And my friends got that, and I just got sponsored by Burton, and he handed me a 151 Air. And I was just like... I mean, it's cool, it's free, but like, really, this is like, I would have rather worked all summer, just bought the Joyride.
Yeah.
And
broke it. Because they all broke.
Totally, actually, you're right. So I rode that for, I think, luckily it was only for like a couple weeks, and then the 139 Twin came out.
Yeah.
Like the classic one with the girls in the bottom. And like, that was the year that Burton finally, after the Ouija board, they actually finally started making some twins, making some good boards.
Yeah, they were a little late to it, hey?
Yeah.
I mean, their shapes were working for them.
Yeah.
Like when you think of that Terrier and the brushy, you know, brushy trout and the sword board, they weren't really that functional.
No, I mean, and brushy's board was sick, but, you know, Burton always has their, they always have their like mass amount of boards. So like, cool, brushy can have a dope shape. Yeah. Terrier can have a whack shape, but he's dope.
Yeah.
And the rest of you can have airs, right? It's kind of like, there you go. Maybe you get a Craig Kelly that's sitting in the back of the room from like, you know, they forced on the shop.
They were trying to do that ASM air too for a while. Mm-hmm. Like there were a couple of dudes that talked about that was going to be their pro model. I think Jason Ford, Jeff Davis.
Like, oh, yeah?
They were putting it out there. Like Burton was, in the beginning, I don't know, maybe the whole way through. You see it in that Burton movie of Jake. The coolness comes from the riders.
Yeah.
It's not like he's like super cool out in the world being like Mr. Cool Guy.
Yeah.
He never claimed to be that either. Mm. I mean, Tom Sims, on the other hand, when you see those two going head to head in the movie, Tom Sims was, you know, consummate West Coast cool guy.
It was cool to see that because, like, I just know Jake as just the ultimate competitor, right? And that's what was so fun about the relationship. Whether you show up at his house and he's watching, you know, a Giants game and you just root for the other team just to do it because you know he's going to lose his fucking mind. And it's, but that was like the fun aspect of it. So watching that and being like, oh, I never knew the Tom Sims thing, right? Because like by the time I came into it, he could care less. He's like, we're dominating.
Oh,
like,
big time.
Yeah. So it was cool to see that vibe. But even to what you're saying with the Ace of Mare, it makes sense because he was always performance.
Yeah.
And if you think about it, like an Ace of Mare, especially back then, would perform technically better, right? Sure. So why would you have something twin that doesn't technically help?
Right.
So yeah, I mean, obviously that got all polished out, but.
Yeah. Well, that twin too, right? So the Ouija twin was like Gooch and those guys. Rippy was on it, I think, too, before his pro model.
Yeah.
It was a dope board.
Yeah.
And then you've got, so that twin 38 is probably the very first board that actually like fits you properly and actually works the way you want a board to work.
Yeah. I mean, I was 16. I don't even know if I knew what a board needed to do, but it was, it felt cool, right? It was, it had a progressive graphic on it, that all over print, and then two girls on the bottom. The 47 was sick that year, too.
Yeah.
But I mean, at that moment, everything was just working, right? It was like, got the board, got some stuff, met Jeff Curtis, you know, got a Burton ad. Like, everything was like clicking.
That's dope.
And then I broke my ankle rollerblading. And that was a good one.
Are you being serious?
I swear to God, I literally had just signed my deal.
Yeah.
I was at my friend's barn. My cousin, we had an indoor barn. And we were skateboarding, but then I was also like messing around with rollerblades.
Sure.
And a kid. I dropped in, and another kid dropped in, hit each other. He fell on me and split my two lower bones. Oof. Surgery, plate, five screws. My dad's like, you would never do anything again that you don't get paid to do. I was like, ah, oh. And he's like, yeah, okay, you'll talk to me in a year when your shit's still rehabbing. Yeah, it was brutal. It was a pretty gnarly setback.
Yeah, that's nasty. So what happens? You have to take a year off competitions, and everyone that you're at the level with gets better, and you kind of stay the same, or?
I mean, it's so many years ago, but I mean, I had to get surgery. It was probably like a 9-month process. And it just, I think a lot of riders go a longer distance before getting hurt and then having to face it. But me, I was like, oh gosh, like getting hurt sucks. And then like, you know, favoring it and wearing a cast inside your boot and all like the things. Right.
Yeah.
But eventually just went, you know,
like you were a kid.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like you're whatever. 15 years old or whatever. You heal fast.
Yeah.
But that's a nasty one.
Yeah, also just so stupid, right? You're like, fuck, the stars finally aligned. And it's like, you're really going to drop the ball, like, first play.
So you eventually drop the racing thing and focus on half pipe at some point, I guess, hey?
Yeah, I think it was deep into it, though.
Okay.
Like, I wonder, like, I'd have to go back and look, but, I mean, at Nationals, I competed in racing. And that I was 16, right? So
yeah.
John Summers won. I got second.
Right.
It was the first pipe dragon pipe in Bowabic, Minnesota. We were all just like, what the? This is like the future.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we were training gates there. We did GS, did slalom. Like it was just part of it, right? It's.
Yeah, I hear you. There was the overall title that meant a lot. And I mean, because you get into it through competing, that's like what. You know, that's your metric for how am I doing in the sport, right?
Totally.
Like I was just talking to Emmanuel Krebs, like I said before, he got a sponsorship. Then he just stopped competing, started shooting photos for ads and that was it.
Yeah.
And snowboarding for fun every day.
Yeah.
Like, so that's the same era. You know what I mean? Like it's, you could go one way, you could go the other, you could get stuck being a contest kid, you could...
Whoa. First off, you slipped there twice. One, I would say it wasn't like I wasn't having fun.
Okay,
like,
okay.
I loved it, right?
Yes.
I remember even like, not with a home ec, what class is it in like high school, but like learning how to like make fiberglass like braces for like racing gates or like, you know, whatever. You're a kid, that's all you know.
Yeah.
It was a ton of fun. I mean, it's... Cool. Maybe not fun in your eyes, but same thing competing.
Thank you.
Like
thank
I would.
No, that is true, man. I hated the races. I hated them. I hated them. I remember guys like goofing around in them because like they had to make it mandatory you did the races. They didn't say, oh, the racers have to compete in halfpipe. Because if they didn't make it mandatory, none of the dudes would race. But I'm, you know what? The thing that I'm feeling this year more than ever is that that cool guy thing, it's such a limiter on like people's like just it, you hide behind the group. Like becoming a part of a group is so fun. And but mostly it's so safe. You know what I mean? Like you can go hang out with your guys. And the people that bug you at school, they can't touch you because they can't be there because they can't keep up. And you feel like, all right, this is cool. But there's this coolness thing that I just, I never got. I mean, I look like a clown. I'm wearing crazy shit right now. I have a haircut that's bizarre. You know what I mean? Like I never got the cool thing. But so then I would just overemphasize, like, I hate racing. I mostly hated racing because I'm scared to go that fast, man. Eating shit that fast, you get hurt. Especially in those old felt line boots and shit, you know what I mean? But yeah, I always was definitely a pipe snob. Like, even though I never got any good at it, I was like, I hate racing.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was just whatever was fun. I mean, and I think, so the cool guy thing, I mean, I grew up straight edge till I was 21. And there was comfort in that, right? There's like camaraderie, the whole crew of all of us. But even when I look back, it's like, we were kind of... We were like a different version of the things we hated, right? Because we were championing something so hard and judging people so hard for their choices yet, right? It's almost like there's like a proudness in it that's kind of like sickening when you look back when you're like, whoa, did we really think we were that cool because we weren't drinking, right? So we're going to judge people. Like, right. And there's people that take it to the extreme of like, you know, slashing tires at parties. You're like, really? You have that much hate inside you? So I don't know. I guess I've – even today, like it's – to me, it's less about cool. It's just, fuck, what is fun?
There you go. Yeah, that was always kind of my vibe.
Because nobody wasn't cool when it started.
No.
And there's years even just recently, I think, that it wasn't that cool. Right?
sure,
what is cool? Right. To me, I don't know.
Well, being with the cool guys, I mean, for me, it feels good. When I see Jamie Lynn at Mount Baker and then I'm hanging with Jamie Lynn at Mount Baker, I feel cool. But the only thing that makes that guy cool is he doesn't give a fuck. You know what I mean? Like he would hang out with anybody.
Totally.
Yeah. He's a really nice guy.
Yeah.
When it comes down to it. But yeah, I mean, they're definitely in every sport I've ever done, which is just really skateboarding and snowboarding. There's all these rules to this freedom, to this free sport. You know what I mean? Don't have a Euro stance. Don't have a duck stance. Straight across. You don't wear your gloves over your jacket. Wear them under your jacket. Don't wear gloves at all.
Totally.
You know what I mean? Like it's, and in skateboarding, it's like, don't ride a longboard. Don't have soft wheels. Oh my God. Don't ride anything other than indies, but don't ride them too tight. You know, all these things that it's like, just once you grow up, you realize, oh, I just do what's fun.
Or you can realize in the middle.
Yes.
I mean, like even just think like I saw a post recently, someone shitting on Sean's stance.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, I forget the comment, but it was just like really? Like, who fucking cares?
Who cares?
Right? Like,
yeah. Yeah. Who cares? How could you possibly care what his stance is? Like, unless you knew him personally or something.
But even if you know him, like, it's clearly working.
Yeah.
It's working. And if it's not working, whatever. That's on him. Like, whatever. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. We're so divided, which is engineered from what I understand, totally. Right? Like it's engineered through the Facebook algorithm amplifying outrage, right? Like for engagement. I think that's not up for debate. That's like the way that it's working right now. And you see it in comments. Oh my God, you know? Yeah. And I had my first negative comment the other day, like pretty long one. I'm reading it and it was about Donna. You guys are all on the wrong side of whatever's going on. You're spreading hate with your Black Lives Matters and all these things that are engineered to divide us. I'm like, what do I do? I just reached out to the guy, like personally.
Yeah.
I was like, I want to send him a message. I had to request to be his buddy. I don't know that he's got back to me yet. I don't want to do it in the comments because I don't want that kind of, like, I don't want to promote that kind of engagement. You know what I mean? Like, hey, man, you're totally have your opinion. But I mean, you're saying shit about me that I'm like, you don't even know me, man. Like, what are you talking about? Like, let's have a conversation. Yeah. Why are you so mad? Actually, I landed on, I'm so flattered that that dude thinks I've got enough engagement and listeners that he's going to like comment in my shit. Like, right on, dude.
Totally.
Like, have at her. Yeah. But like the whole Donna thing, like you were close with the family, right? Mm-hmm. Like they were notoriously available for their team through your era, especially. Like if you went to Burton, you're going to be hanging with those guys.
Yeah. I mean, well, we wouldn't go if we weren't, right? but no, I mean, I had keys to Jake's house in Long Island and access to his car or whatever. Right. I think that was one that he was aware, at least in my opinion, he was aware of his competitive nature and the brutality of things, where even, you know, for one of my contract negotiations, we were there for the round tables and it was like a week long process. And, you know, basically the one person's telling me that I'm done, you know, and then I'm supposed to be present. And he was like, hey, if you want to like take my car, go see your mom. Cool. Like, you know, here's the keys to the house. Like, I mean, it was a brutal negotiation, but it was still like a human aspect to it. Right. And there are other parts that I wish, you know, it'd be cool to see more support for people in the industry past, right? Like, I think there's a lot of like, there's not a lot of legends in our sport because it's an expensive like hobby after you're being paid, right? It's like skateboarding where like, you know, you can show up to a city and, you know, just hang. It's different. Do I think it'd be cool to support that more? Yes.
Yeah.
But whatever, it is a business. So
I think that we hit the ground in the wrong way. The more that I look at the industry from way back then, I think there were innovators and there were people that were making it happen. And right away in every direction, there were like money makers. Like, let's make a magazine that showcases snowboarding and sells ads. You know what I mean? Like,
but you needed that though.
Yeah, you need it.
I mean, sure. I had an interview with Jake and we did like a 6-hour interview.
Wow.
And it was awesome where he's just going through and just talking. He's like, dude, it's like when I was trying to grow this, and he talked a little bit about it in the movie where like, he's like, I was trying to grow this and I'm going to ski mags. And they're like, no, we won't take your money to run ads. He's like, I'm trying to like grow a sport here. Yeah. And like, what the hell? You won't accept my money? They're like, no, it's a waste. Right. So like, I think there are elements where you have to develop the industry around it. And I don't know. You need cash for it to work.
Yes.
Right. Like everyone shits on drinks. Like I remember I rode for Pepsi/Sobe, one of the first probably people, me and why am I spacing his name? But anyway, this was a 6-figure deal that helped me do what I wanted to do.
Holy
right?
shit.
Right? It was like,
yeah.
And they paid me for 10 years. So it was
Jesus.
Like, and nowadays drinks are normal. But back then it was like super uncool. And I was like, it's super uncool
to
be broke.
Like a patch? Yeah. It's way less cool to be super broke.
Being broke sucks.
But as a spokesperson for Pepsi.
But it was Sobe Beverages.
What's Sobe? I don't even know.
It's like
what
a drink out of South Beach that got bought by Pepsi.
Yeah.
S-O-B-E. Like,
yeah, yeah. It's got like
every headphone that you ever saw me wear, they supported. They like would do anything for me. Longtime friends. Z Trip, if you know him as a DJ, he was part of them. I mean, they did cool stuff. It just wasn't technically cool by our industry's judgmental standards.
That's cool that we're having this conversation about it.
Whatever.
Because that's kind of, yeah, because a lot of people, I used to shit on them too. Same. Like, oh, you got an energy drink sponsor? Meanwhile, I drink energy drinks every day, dude, at work. Like, I'm such a hypocrite. Energy drinks, I just don't want my kids to drink them. That's the only thing.
Totally.
So then video game guys don't get endorsed by energy drinks because then my kids will see them and think they're cool. I don't even know what the hell is marketing. I don't know who's marketing to my kids. You know what I mean?
Everyone.
Like, I don't know what they're, like, who's getting through. Like, who is getting through to my kids? Like, what do my kids think is cool? That is definitely just like.
How old are they?
22 and 18.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Pretty much.
They're on.
They're fully cooked. That's okay. So the heyday of Keir Dillon is half pipe competition. So, right? Tried to get there before, but.
Yeah. Like, I mean, it's. Pretty much. I mean, you're from the East Coast, right? I mean, there was definitely no backcountry riding. There was like, I mean, we were riding golf courses in mellow East Coast resorts. And the pipe, at least, was something that was, especially as we got a little older, was something that was truly created and able to be performed on. Totally. You know, outside of the like curb cuts on a hill, like groomers, like there were no like parks really.
Right.
So it was a place where you could actually just get better. Like,
yeah.
for me, whether it was skateboarding, BMX, snowboarding, I just wanted to get always get better, like push myself, fall, like improve, create the impossible. Like that's what I loved about action sports. I think even today, like when I watch it, it's mind blowing because I remember like intentionally sitting and being like, where could snowboarding go? And I'm sure all of us, you know, we do it.
Yeah.
And just to see that every year it gets that much more progressive and that much, you know, the athletes get that much better. And, you know, like a lot of people are like, oh, too much spinning. I watch people spin, and to me, it's still smoother than I've ever seen anyone ever spin.
It's insane, right?
Like, it, yeah. To me, when you're like, oh, like, back to Jamie Lynn, like, oh, it's not like Jamie Lynn's threes. It's like, go watch his 360s. Like, it's off a 10-foot kicker, and it's not that smooth.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah, yeah.
Like, I just saw that kid Rennie doing a 1980 or whatever the heck it was.
Yeah.
Probably as smooth as I've ever seen a spin in my entire life, right? Like,
they're good at snowboarding, man.
Yes. I don't particularly love it for – selfishly, I don't love where the sport has gone because I would have loved for my kids to do it. And now as a parent, it's tough to be like, cool, go sign up for that. Like, do I want them to do it and have fun? Yes. But yeah, I would be scared out of my mind if my daughter's like, you know what? I'm going for this, Dad.
Yeah.
I'd be like, oh, God.
Yeah. Yeah. I noticed that myself, right, with my own kids. Like, I thought that I could – coach them in the park.
Yeah.
But like when they're standing at the top of the in run going from here straight, like really? And I'm thinking like, I don't know. I don't want them to break their arm and then it's my fault that they, you know what I mean? You totally got this. And then they're badly hurt. I'm like, I don't have that in me as a dad to like, they need to find that themselves. I can just bring them to the hill and they can ride around. And if they get to the point where they want to jump off shit, then good. I don't want to be there saying, no, you can do this. This is the next thing for you.
Yeah.
Because you're going to hit that rail or whatever. You know what I mean? It's totally, I mean, that's what you want for your kids is them to find something that they can be as passionate about as we were about snowboarding. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Like you got your entire adult start in this group of like epic dudes traveling around to all these incredible places. What was that like? Like who was the little army of half pipe riders that you would travel with or would compete against and hang out with?
Yeah. I mean, it's been so long, but I mean, first it's your local crew, right? It's your local mountain. And then even that has the posses. And then from there, it's like, okay, we're going to go compete against Vermont. So that's kind of like, then all the people that you didn't like in your local crew then became kind of part of it. Cause you're taking on the East Coast, right? Totally. Vermont. And then that's almost like, that continues on. But for me, I was lucky, like, whether it was Jeff Brushy, whether it's Trevor Andrew, whether it's Ross Powers, like, there was a lot of the older guard that had grown up snowboard, like, halfpipe riding that still had, like, their, like, fingers in it that could, like, you know, like, I remember, like, driving around for 2 years with Brush in his van, like, going to contests because he wouldn't fly, right? It was like, fuck, we're with Brush right now.
No way.
Like, you know, and it's just like, we're like Joe Curtis or just, like, a lot of, like older kind of guys that just kind of teach you how to act right and how to function and just how to like look at things. And then Trevor and I were just like super competitive and always trying to one up each other, same age, same board, same everything, right? Like just, but it was cool. Like that camaraderie that like makes you better. I don't know. It's like, it becomes a blur. Like when I look back now, it's, I'll talk to like some friends in the like, you know, remember a trip from Europe, like not like snowboard, like pro, but like trips. Like, oh yeah, I went to like, you know, St. Moritz and I stayed here. And I'm like, dude, we went to St. Moritz like probably 50 times. I can't remember one thing about it except for the name, right? It's kind of like, oh my God, it's such a waste.
Right.
Because you're so in the, you're so tunnel vision of just, for me, it was always just like wanting to get better, wanting to land a shot, like get a shot, land a trick, whatever it is, like very just hyper focused. It didn't matter if we were in Europe or in Japan or wherever. You were just kind of there doing it, right?
Yeah.
Looking for a pipe that actually worked.
Totally. So off the plane to your hotel room, get your gear ready, ride all day back to the hotel room.
Yeah, and some debauchery along the way, I'm sure.
Yeah. So what happens when you turn 21? Why did you decide not to be straight edge anymore?
I don't know if it was – I mean, I'm sure like anything, right? It's when I was growing up, it was the influence of the older kids. And then as I'm traveling now, it's more, you know, you're being exposed to it. I also got into like progressive house, which is pretty much techno, which is pretty much trance. And that's just a straight line towards drugs, right? Like, like New York City raves is like as fast line night as you can go that way.
Yeah.
But it was, I think for me, I was a pretty shy, like, I look at my son now and he seems like very shy and like reserved. And I think a lot of me was that way, right? Mm. Like, it's just what I was exposed to and having, like, I was shy probably. And I think doing drugs and drinking and just entering into that a little bit was like, oh, wow, I can actually like open up a little bit. Mm. And I even to this day, like, like anything, it's a gift and a curse, right? There's a lot of good, I think, that came from it. And just even just me looking at snowboarding, looking at my career and dreaming and visualizing and they're all helpers for that. Mm. Like, it's,
yeah, of course.
So I don't know. I think it's also part of getting older, right? It's especially as a kid that's then starting to make money and you really, the training wheels are off. My parents were always pretty like, do whatever you want. Just like, literally don't go to jail, please. Don't get a piercing, right? Like, that was kind of like the rules. So when you're functioning off of that and you're somewhat of a good kid, you can dance into things pretty easily, right? Because you don't feel like you're going to get judged, because you're not going to get judged. Like, you know, not by my parents and your friends usually you're with, they're not judging you because they're the ones doing it. Right?
Yeah, so totally. It's like,
yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. All right. How does Friends start? What's that story?
So, I mean, I think like anything, there's multiple inputs, right, that bring it to life. For me, I had started a company called Dylan Design years before. You know, I just always wanted to create something, right? Like, whether it's t-shirt company, sticker company, whatever it was. And then, at least the way I remember it, it was X Games, myself and Danny Davis. We didn't make it to the finals. You know, we're at the Little Nell just sitting there watching the finals on TV, like, what the fuck? This sucks. And we just started talking about, like, hey, let's like do a company, right? Like, and it was, you know, we came up with the name Friends. I think he came up with the name Friends because we wanted something to just symbolize like crew. We'd already like, you know, been riding together with like Mason and Jack Matrani and Luke and all them. But it was more like just a formulation of like, how we could actually like, do something. But it was like, it was basically a glorified sticker company, right? I mean, it's like, cool, we got some stickers. We had like made like an ape shirt that said Friends on it and made some tie dye and like, and that was it. And it became more of just a philosophy, right? Of just like, you know, there's no line friends, live life to the fullest, hang out with like-minded people, right? We were all like traveling. It was like this, I think for a lot of us, it was like this money had really started to come in. We could see how it could change people. We could see how it would affect us and also like competing. It's like if we show up to the contest and like I win and you know, if I win, maybe I get a pro model. Like it's like real stuff, right?
Yeah.
It was like, it was our way of like, I think creating a framework to still function and live within the realm of like, yeah, we're making money, but we can like still stay pure to why we got into this. And I think it then took even more of a life, you know, for the younger guys is like, you know, they were more on the age of Sean, right? So it's like you're living like Sean and his whole sphere, right? It's like, and they're like kind of like, well, this is like the antithesis of Sean in a way. Even though like we were all kind of friends, it was like a way to kind of like get back, I would say.
I got you. I follow.
Even if it was subconscious, right? It's just like a bond. Like, dude, it sucks showing up and someone's always winning. Like it just does, right?
Yeah.
Especially when you're like not hanging out all the time. And you know, Sean was cool. I mean, he brought my, you know, kid a present when she was born and we hung out tons, but it was still like everyone just has their own journey for it. So Friends was more of a like a sticker company, and then it was like towards the end or slash the beginning, it was like, let's make this real, right? So like, we, you know, we kind of knew like you mentioned, like you saw Wildcats and whoever, like you're like, oh, we could actually like make something here, right?
Yeah.
Granted, we were probably delusional, right? Like, oh yeah, cool, we're gonna make a company.
I don't think so. It seemed like it took off right away, didn't it? Just do exponential growth, like year one, year two, year three.
Yeah, because I mean, this goes back to like because we were constantly on TV in magazines and had this influence in that sphere. Like, yeah, I mean, other companies are paying you six figures to put a sticker. You have somebody that's going to champion. You have seven people that are going to champion something like they own it because they do.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's an opportunity there. Right. But I think a lot of, I mean, it working was just more the ethos behind it in a time period of snowboarding and championing. To me, that's the purity of snowboarding, is like, you're like crew.
Yeah.
And then it came to point like, let's do something with this. Right. And it was like, oh, we could do goggles. No, because we all have sponsors. And then basically my partner who we brought on, and I'd known him for about 20 years. He was a team manager at Burton, and Gravis, you know, we brought him on to kind of like add structure to it. And he came up with the idea like, hey, why don't we do headphones? Right. And it was right at the time where like Skullcandy was, I think they valued it like $200 million and never made a headphone. It was all OEM from China. Beats was just getting ready to launch. So like they were like, dude, we can like make a better headphone than somebody that just OEMs it from China. Like,
yeah,
And that's kind of like where we jumped in and just, you know, kind of anchored the ethos around the product.
Yeah. So your business partner is the guy who started Red Helmets.
Well, the chairman of our board is the guy that.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Chairman of your board. So he knows how to do this stuff, right? 100%. Like he knows how to source good shit.
Everything.
Get the designers. You guys design it yourself? Like,
yeah.
You guys were cool enough to look and go, hey, these are headphones for snowboarding.
Well, we weren't putting,
we use them.
We weren't putting like pen to paper, but it was, you know, we worked with Ricardo. He worked at Burton, right? He's like, and he has still to this day a crazy design firm. So we went to him and we're like, you know, brought up same process as Burton, right? Like, yeah. Here's what we think is cool. Yeah. Let's make our version of it.
Cool.
But again, like anything, that's a lot of industry people that had done it that believed in the sport of snowboarding / us to like figure out and help us make it happen.
That's rad. Yeah. I don't want to glaze over that. That is a big part of snowboarding. Hey, like bring in something that's functioning, that works, like just make this and tweak it a little, please.
Well, everything, right? I mean, yeah. it's everything's yeah. a remix, right? Like nothing's, yeah. nothing's new. So
yeah. I mean, because when it is, it's hard fucking work, right? And you miss the mark a bunch of times. And then someone takes your thing, your Burton board, and goes, oh, make one of these, but like this.
Totally.
And then that's the way it works.
No.
It's the way it's always worked. So with the structure and with the group of dudes that are, was there a buy-in? Was there like a meeting where you guys were like, okay, let's put in X amount and then we all own the company like equally or something.
Yeah. So we did a, first we did a, it gives a sticker company. It's like, oh, cool. We're making a company.
Yeah.
And then it's all of a sudden like, it's, we got to put seed capital in this. Right. So everyone's, mm-hmm. I know, I think it was like 20 or 30 grand per person. And it was based upon pro rata what the ownership was.
Yeah.
That's also where the decisions of like, hey, you're an athlete and people are going to run it. There needs to be a certain amount of ownership split here. And we did it on scales of success the company had to do, and we overthought everything.
Rad.
Had conversations with Andy Latz of like, you know, he's like, you know, partnerships are destined to fail, and basically here's why, and kind of gave us some metaphors to think about. And I mean, we try to do everything you could possibly do to make it not implode. But mm-hmm. when you have, you know, eight people, it's hard.
Right. 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 What's the trajectory? How does it explode, and then how does it implode?
I mean, we had initial successes for men's, you know, we were in all the Zoomies. It was working.
That's big.
It was, I think we did, maybe we did like $1 million or something like that in that year. But it was also the time when like Sony had launched a brand, there was Peak, there was Soul, there was so many headphone companies coming into the space, but also coming into like the action sports youth lifestyle space.
Right.
So that's when I just remember like being like, we need to figure out a way to actually like be different, right? The whole reason we got into this is like, we want to be creative. We want to be different, right? And we can make a better headphone. And all of a sudden it's like, everyone's making headphones geared towards guys. And that's when I just came up with the idea, like half the world's women, they're using the same devices that cause us to wear headphones called iPads, iPods, phones.
Yeah.
I mean, if we made like a really cool, like women's headphone and we could keep the ethos of like friends and the camaraderie of what it means, but gear it towards women, we might have something here.
And you didn't think at all, there's no women in this group.
No, because this was already now a year and a half, 2 years into it, and like lots of money.
Okay.
Right. Like we'd already raised money. I had already put a lot of money into it. Like there's
Like
now it's more, and I'm not saying that's a good decision, but now it was more just business.
Gotcha.
Like meaning like there's lots of cash in here and like, it's not fully working and we needed to like, you know, like it's snowboarding. Like we want to win. We want to like do something dope.
We need a hit. Oh. Like we need something that's gonna, you know, sell.
That has a chance to win.
Yeah, 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 yeah. There you go.
You know, and the idea seemed to make sense. And we got an insane designer, this guy Jerome Maj, who had actually done the One Skull Candy headphone that was like the best they've ever done. He's like an insane fashion designer. He understood the vision behind how do we like infuse jewelry accessories into like basically. An accessory that women would want to wear if it didn't play audio, right? Like something that still had those, the language. And we pitched Apple and it worked, and pitched Best Buy and it worked. And we were like, oh shit, like we're going to like, this is going to be gnarly, and got investors. And, you know, it was taking off for sure.
Yeah.
Along the way that we blew up the balance sheet and got overextended and, you know, launched in all doors Apple and didn't do any channel marketing and had to pull the product back. So, I mean, it was a crazy ride, the whole journey, right? And like, I mean, we had three billionaires on our cap table, and like just the level of where we were functioning at was definitely life zapping. And then even at the time, when I think back now, like I wasn't snowboarding. I'd stopped doing X Games hosting. Like the thing that I fell in love with snowboarding was like the purity of the mind and the calming and like this, like even just recently when I went, I was like, oh, this is what I love about snowboarding. It's just like you're present.
Yeah.
It's like, it's life giving. You know, when you're in the thick of it, you let that stuff slide. And, you know, so not only are you not probably tapped into like the belief systems and also like what you're doing and the reason that you're doing it, now you're like this business guy, right?
Yeah.
It's,
that sounds,
I wouldn't say that I'm some business guy, right? It's sat in a seat.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds like it zapped your, like it started wiring you weird, right?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, like, especially when you're like, my life savings is in this, right? Like I put $1 million into friends.
Damn.
Like that to be vaporized, like that. That's not a great pill. Like you're going to, at least for me, I'm going to die to like not let that happen.
Sure.
Does that make you do dumb decisions and bad calls? 100%.
Yeah. So what are some of these bad calls? Because I really honestly don't know.
Well, I think number one, business-wise, pivoting friends to women's made 100% of sense. Like it was like total sense.
Yeah.
We should just did a different company.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah,
like,
right.
Why did I take the equity of friends? That I'm not going to use any bit of it towards marketing it into the women's fashion space. Like why didn't just, in hindsight, I would have kept friends be used lifestyles and then I would have started another company under the same umbrella even. You know, because it was just, it undermined the whole aspect of why we got into doing it, right? Of like camaraderie with your friends and
Were some of the friends like at each other's throats over this decision? Like,
I don't know if they're at their throats, they're at my throat. Like, what the fuck did you just do?
Oh, gotcha.
And I get it, right? But at the time, you're like, oh, it's about making money. And I think, and even in the beginning, it was like, well, dude, we just literally, here's the investors we got. We landed Apple and Best Buy. Like, we're landed, like we have these collaborations. Like, it's working.
Yeah.
So I think it was that melded it. Like, okay, fuck, you stole our company. And like, okay, at least it's working. Maybe like, we'll get it, like, it'll work in the end.
Yeah.
But it was still like, it was raw, right? Yeah. In hindsight, definitely raw. I think that was like, that to me was one of like, that was the hardest one in hindsight. Cause it just created a divide. Everything from there and on, it's just, you know, it's a business.
Yeah.
Business wise, I think we were functioning off of the model of create a brand that's full of air, meaning like you're constantly raising money, building brand, which like it works when everything works, but if something breaks because you're inflating everything, meaning like, You're not making money every year. You're constantly just raising money. So like when your balance sheet gets messed up, you're kind of done.
You're toast. Yeah.
And then we were toast.
And you went through a lot of shit because of this, right? Like you get away from snowboarding and personally your personal life starts to suffer.
Yeah. I mean, I had a daughter that I wasn't a father to, and I got divorced and I got hooked on drugs and then I lost $1 million and then I got sued 3 times and I had to sell my house down to zero to pay all the lawsuits. I mean, it was a complete nightmare. That's, right?
Who sues you? Who are the people on these lawsuits?
One of our investors, one of the athletes, which was total bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
And then, Nordstrom.
Oof.
Yeah.
On just like not delivering a PO or something.
It was a total bullshit. Like we were factoring our inventory through a third party because our balance sheet was messed up. So we had to like leverage another relationship to like actually like purchase inventory. At the end, I ended up buying that company. So I owned both.
Oh, wow.
Which then Nordstrom, there was like something that got messed up with the accounting of like hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
And they're like, dude, you're the CEO of both. You're like trying to be a weasel here. You know, they put 8 counts of fraud on me. Like,
oh, wow.
And I was overly open about like everything, like an idiot, like talking to them at Nordstrom. I'm like, listen, like we have no money. The other company has no money.
Oh, no.
I have no money. So they're like, cool. Like fraud's not dismissible. Right. So like, they're like, cool. We get you on fraud. Like, it doesn't matter if you have no money, you'll spend the rest of your life paying for it. So like, there was just idiot maneuvers as a rookie of me being like, oh yeah, I'll be open about everything. It'll be helpful. It's like, no, shut your mouth.
And you're not saying on mic to lie to people. You're just like, hey, look, don't expose yourself. Right?
Yeah. I mean, just stupid stuff, right? Yeah. Like, I mean, simple stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, it was, and even that, like, it's, up until then, no matter what the scenario was, there was always like a way out. Like there was always a, you know, in any aspect of life, like work harder, figure out a way. And this was like the first time ever where it was like, there's no way out. Mm. Like in, I was like, I'll die to make it happen. And I almost died to make it happen. Right. And, but right. it didn't. Right? Right. So I think that was the, in hindsight, that'd be the other one of like, it would have been nice to have just let it die. Right. Like at the yeah. time it's inconceivable. You're like, what do you mean? How could you do that? And it's like, yeah. dude, like,
yeah, here we are 5 years out. Right.
Totally.
And it's completely, you know,
it's who cares?
Who cares? Right? You can only stress so much. Like you're telling me this about the lawsuits and everything, and I'm thinking about the time I was fired from the post office. I just went in. They said, "Hey, what's this mail?" I said, "I didn't deliver it. I didn't feel like it." They said, "Okay, well, you're fired then." And I mean, every guy and girl that worked there who delivered mail didn't say like, "Oh my God, you've hid mail, like what are you, an idiot?" They said, "Where did you hide it?" They said, "Hey, listen, what you're supposed to do is, what you got to do is this and that." And everybody told me their own little way of doing hiding it. I wasn't hiding it at all. And it's like, oh shit, now I'm fired. I gotta get my job back. It was a real pain in the ass, man. My kids are making fun of me. You got fired for not delivering the mail. That's the only thing you have to do as a mailman, isn't it? It's one thing. But I as I get older, I see everything through the lens of an experience is an experience, right? Having a kid is a really, mm-hmm. really mm-hmm. big experience. Losing your job is not quite that big, but it's a big experience. Doesn't matter whether the thing is super positive or super negative. It's the energy of having an experience. That's why we're here. Yeah. I think that's my guess, because sitting around doing nothing or numbing yourself to experience, it's not sustainable.
It's not sustainable. I agree. But I think in hindsight, right, the numbing is needed to be able to process the shock value of things.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
it's not, I think just even recently where it's like processing it enough to being like, okay, like the energetic level of it, you know, like, even when I moved back here, I was like, dude, you literally like had millions of dollars and it's like vaporized.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like I just pissed it away on like some stupid things. Like I was trying to be smart. So it's, I think there's a level of like, and for me, my dad died. He had $0 in his bank account. Mm. I was like, dude, I never want to go out like that. We're like, he died at 59. If he had lived another 20 years, it would have been horrible in the sense of just like no cash. Right. So it's like, I had always been like, I want to be smart with my money. I want to do this. So then to like, wake up and you're 40 and you have no money, you worked your entire life, everything, every competition, everything, and it's gone. It's, to me, there's a lot of just like guilt, shame, like how the heck do I get off this planet? And if I'm not trying to get off this planet, meaning kill myself, like I need to numb it to function, right? Like, and all you, by the way, like you literally lost all your friends and you've like pissed away everything, and like, you know, like whether it's merited or not, it's like I created an environment that was pretty unlivable, right? So it's like numbing then works, right? It's like it's the only way to, I think, to function.
Yeah, I mean I can't believe how smiley you are while you're talking about it now. Like, I don't read any nervousness in this at all. Like, you're not like worried about what you're saying. You're not worried about that. Losing the millions of dollars and you got a big smile on your face. It's like you've come to terms with it somehow. Most people would never. I think
we don't have a choice though.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, you could kill yourself. I mean,
that's an option. Luckily, I'm not wired that way.
Good for you, man.
I also think that one, when you're numb, you're not thinking that way. You're thinking, how can I get fucked up?
That's true.
Right. I know it's both sad, but it's the survival mechanism.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It's, we all fuck up.
Yeah, totally.
Right. Like there's a million times like that, like, and it was cool to even hear Sean and like in the video, the Jake video is like, you know, like with the fire extinguisher, like that could have like ended his career. But like, we're also in a sport, especially where we come from, of like the older gen, it's like we were counterculture. We were literally on the fringes. Like it was like, we were doing this not to be cool. We were doing this because we felt called to, and we wanted to be around like-minded people that also fell in love with the sport that could like, you could be individual, you could still be individual, but like doing it with people, like that's the essence. So now, like, we're gonna judge people because of other things, when really, like, all those things were the reason that brought us together back in the day.
Absolutely.
Right? So it's,
I think there is something there too of exposing young athletes to a lifestyle that maybe you're not ready for. You're not, there's no, you know, it requires a lot of mentorship. But if you as a person, as the adult in the room, don't already know your own shit, you don't have your own demons taken care of, you can really do some fucking damage, man, introducing people to different, you know, especially if people look up to you. Like, hey, that cool guy's doing the cool thing or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, it's, how you say, I mean, as somebody that's been through rehab, right? So meaning like,
yeah,
I understand the implications of it. I think there's a level of like, there's some ownership there, but then there's also like, I think we have to also just own it ourselves. Like, you're trying to tell me at 19, I don't know that if like, or 21 or whenever, I don't know that doing this is going to be bad for me. Like, I'm weighing the odds. Mm-hmm. Yes, maybe somebody that I think is cool is doing it and I'm trying to do it. Like, there's just, would it be cool if people could do that? Yes. But I think also like when you're at that top echelon, you're also just living your life. So you create your circle. And if people want to come into that circle, that's kind of like, you don't have to, right? Like Dave Downing wasn't doing drugs, right? Like it's such,
sure.
You know, you can be a grown boy.
Yeah.
And
yeah, yeah,
yeah. It's, so I, for me, like I just, especially growing up, like I wanted to do drugs. Like I didn't want to be a drug addict, but I wanted to go do a party. So like, I can't sit back and be like, oh yeah, that's like bad influence by that person. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? I don't know.
No, I totally know what you mean. It's the same. I mean, I took acid when I was like 15 or 16. I read The Doors of Perception. I thought, this sounds fucking cool. And I've never gone away from it. Luckily, I discovered psychedelics early on. Because I think if I would have found anything else, my tendencies to like have an addictive personality. Yeah.
Well, I think most people do, right? Like snowboarders, athletes, and or like poker players. Like our profile is designed for like addiction in that, right? Like you have to do like a quad flip. You got to be addicted to like to get there, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because it's insane. Otherwise,
totally.
Like the whole way there is insane. I mean, I remember somebody talking about surfing big waves. I think it was my friend Sean, and he says, you know, when he comes in from the beach, people just go like, "Are you insane?" He goes, no, actually, I'm not insane. It's like a lot of baby steps to get to where I'm at. So not ever was I in a place where I was just taking an uncalculated, insane risk, you know? I think
because if you do, I was, especially in sports, like the crazy ones have 2-year careers.
Mike Michaelchuk.
Well, his career was longer. He also got screwed in a lot of ways.
Yeah, he did get hurt too. He got badly hurt.
And then he got bought. And then benched, right? Like there's bought a lot, like I,
that's bad.
Yeah. He probably brings the most pain when I think of a career because number one, I snowboarded with him and I loved him.
Yes.
But like, he also has some crazy stories of like, just things that you're like, that shouldn't ever happen to any human, right? On like, just to even be like, oh yeah, cool, ride for Bert and then we're going to bench you. Or like at the Olympics, like his run, like he's like, before I dropped and I looked down and there's like, he's like, my strap was cut, right? And like,
cut.
He's like razor cut, you know? And it's like,
who the hell would do that?
Who knows, right? But that's like, that's kind of our sport, right?
Who the fuck would do that? That's an insane thing.
Some purist that doesn't want double trucks, right? Like, I'm like, whatever. It's the sport.
Wow. See, that's a cool guy thing again. We're bumping up into it again. Because I can remember thinking that the Michael Huck was, and he didn't want it to be called that.
No one ever wants it to be called after him.
He wanted it to be called the heave-ho. But
now people are doing, like Taylor Gold, I just saw doing it, right? Like now, 12 years later, 15 years, 20 years later, now they're doing it, right? Like, okay, he was doing it switch and regular.
It's insane. Right. Yeah, he was nuts and bigger than anyone had ever seen anyone go in a pipe before.
Totally.
Like there were, it was completely nuts what he was doing.
But like any industry, there's tons of politics, right?
Oof.
You could also just not care.
Right.
And that's what's cool about this day and age too, where like you could not care. And because you're able to control outlets with Instagram, YouTube, whatever, you can just run it.
Yeah.
Right.
It seemed like Brushy didn't care. Did you get that vibe? Like when he was going to contest, was he like stressing before the contest?
I think he was stressing.
He was stressing.
You'd have to ask him, but
I will ask him.
I think to me, the gift and the curse of like becoming known is you can easily fall into the trap of like, not improving because people are like, oh, wait, why is Kira learning front tens? Like, really? He doesn't have that trick already? Like, I can do that trick. That kid sucks. And then you're like, do I really want to do that under the chairlift at Mammoth, like all day training, right? And it's like the sick, twisted like thing where you're like,
yeah,
you start to believe the hype, like, oh, wow, I should know that trick, but fuck, I don't.
Right. So how do you, yeah, so where do you go to learn it, right? That always struck me about Sean. Like, dude, it makes sense, man. He's got his own private places where people can't see what he's doing. He can try anything he wants. He doesn't have any distractions. Like, he was taking it very, very seriously. I thought, what's wrong with that? But then he's not integrating into the group. You could even see it at the end of the Jake movie where he left a space between him and everybody that dropped in at the pipe. There was a space. I mean, it made me cry to see him ride for Jake like that. Yeah. Like, it just seemed like he wasn't contest Sean. He was just riding to ride.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I don't know.
I'm biased because I'm a Sean fan. I wouldn't pull that, but I also didn't win. I also wasn't a competitor. He was, right. So like, for me, I look at it as like in most sports, the top person would go do something like that. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, you would train so people can't see, you could pull out tricks. Like, it just,
yeah,
there's that's called being pro. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. I think where people give shit to him is like, he created a stage where he could have really elevated the sport and gave back and done a lot more. Mm-hmm. Like, even with Virgil passing, I don't know if you're familiar with him or like follow him at all, but like, his influence and impact across so many, like, so many cultures and industries, and like, his always reaching back and educating and trying to help, like, a constantly, like, I'm the best by you being better. Mm-hmm. Right. Where this Sean's ethos wasn't that, where I think that is the one where it would have been cool to see how leveraged in a different way, he could have changed the sport and been like the man instead of like kind of hated.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, most people I talk to about Sean have a really deep respect for the level of,
well, you can't not
riding that he did.
You right? can't
like
not,
you
right?
see it and you're like, yeah, holy shit, this guy. But then like talking with Mikey Renz, and I mean, they were on the team the same time, they're the same age. And, you know, they couldn't have gone differently.
Totally.
Couldn't have gone further apart in the, you know, community versus, I guess, champion. Well, again, I'm not calling out Mikey, because Mikey kicks ass.
No, for sure. Just different paths.
Yeah, totally. And right into the backcountry, too, which is just, yeah. I mean, I don't know. So you've said a couple of times you didn't really have much backcountry. Like, that wasn't your...
I mean, I tried, right? I moved to Whistler. I mean, I moved to North Vancouver.
Oh, yeah.
Lived there
for
2 years.
Rode grouse. I forgot about that. That's crazy.
It was insane.
That's so nuts.
Yeah, it was some of my best powder days were at grouse.
Yeah. It's so fun.
But it was, for me, there was always just a fear, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's, and I remember, like, even just going out with, like, Devin and Trev and Browner, and it's like, it was just a different world. Like, I remember one time we went out, it was the time that Devin blew his teeth out. It was a front. It's like probably 7:30 in the morning. Front seven off this massive cliff, hits his knee on his chin, and teeth explode. And oh, I was just like, and then he's got a concussion. We're driving. I was like, oh my god! Like, this is what filming is. Kind of like, are you serious? Like, get me the hell out of here. But then it's also like, you're with Devin. He's like, no, it's cool, man. It's mellow. It's like, you know, sipping his coffee. And
no,
it's like, oh, you got noticed before. It's like, oh, it's cool, man. Don't even stress about it. Like, just do this. And it's like. So I loved it, and, you know, going out with Anthony Vitale, and just like, there was good people that were trying to make it happen. But I mean, that's when snowboarding, at least for me, is like, if you want to be good at pipe, you got to like focus and do it. Right. Mm. And like this idea of like wanting to go film and try to get some shots for Dogger and stuff was like, I did it because Burton wanted me to do it, and it was fun, but it wasn't like my happy place.
I got you.
Right. When you're out there like
yeah.
stressing over some like 15-foot cliff.
Yeah.
You know, and you're like, like a bunny hill, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Oh my gosh, I feel like I'm gonna cut. Die. Yeah. I feel like I'm gonna get exactly. It's like, even if I do my best trick, it's getting cut.
That sucks. Yeah, I was talking with Devin the other day about just sledding and how Mikey Renz told Mikey Cicerelli, like, dude, you got to enjoy the whole process, right? Like, loading your truck getting up there, like, make sure you're enjoying it the whole way through. And I was telling that to Devin, like, and Devin's like, what do you mean? I'm like, oh, I'm gripped. Like, I hate loading my truck. I hate driving there. I hate parking. I hate getting the sled off. I hate going up the mountain. I hate everything except the snowboarding. He goes, yeah, I mean, I only want to snowboard too, but you got to love the whole thing, right? Totally. Like, he's like, dude, you don't stop in Squamish and get some French fries or something? Like, you come on. He seems to have thrived in the backcountry. It was like any day he went back there. That's what he said. Any day he went sledding was like the best day of his life.
Yeah.
He loved it.
Well, when you're that good and you're always landing tricks, it fucking should be. It should be good days. It's not hard to have them be good days.
Yeah.
But no, I definitely sensed it, right? Like I said, like I picture him sitting on his like sled, like pouring a cup of coffee. Just mm-hmm. like, yeah, man, I'm like at the office.
He's in his zone. Yeah. He's in his zone, yeah. Right? And you're out there like me, like being like, shit, man, we got to go all the way back that way. Yeah. How am I going to get down that thing that I just took 10 times to get up? Come on.
Yeah.
What are we doing here? Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it being better this year. I'm already excited.
No, for sure.
Yeah.
I need to get my epic pass.
Yeah. Where did you go? Where did you go snowboarding last year?
I went up to World Supers at Squaw, which was cool. Slush, it brought me up to that. And that was just rad because it was like Chris Roach was there and like the old guys and the young kids were there. And it was a quarter pipe, which is kind of an equalizer. Even though it wasn't like the best quarter, I was like, fuck this. It had been 8 years.
Eight years?
And I was like, oh my gosh, this is so fun. And then I went home and then went back up to Mammoth to shred with Virgil and Russell and the K2 crew. And that was like when all the pipe shreds were there because they had like the US team pipe. And it was like perfect pipe. All my old homies were there.
No way.
Magical days. It was like 60 degrees. And then went back up again with my family just to like teach them and stuff, which was awesome. And it was just like many things in life. Like when you haven't done it for a while, you're like, oh my gosh, like this is magical. Wow, like just like man. The ADD, like kind of calming down and being one with nature. And like, there's such a magicness with snowboarding, right? And like creating and doing slashes and like pushing yourself and whatever it is, right? Like it's, there's no better feeling.
Dude, it's the best. I love it. I can't believe you took 8 years off. What the hell were you thinking? Gonna be rich. No, you want to be powder rich, man.
I was trying not to die.
Ah, dude. No. Yeah, that's insane. Hey, you mentioned ADD. Did you have a diagnosis of that when you were a kid?
Not when I was a kid. I have dyslexia and ADD. That was later. Psychiatrist, and you know, then I went on like meds, and then I went on all kinds of different meds of like dealing with anxiety and taking like what's it? Antidepressant pills, because if you can get to a certain level, you can't have anxiety. So like, this is when I was actually doing like TV work. I was trying to get to like some dose, like 15 milligrams or something. And I got to like 2 and it felt like my brain was imploding.
Wow.
But it was like, you know, once you start going down that path, which is why I'm pro cannabis now on so many things, like it's just constantly trying to put band-aids on things like, oh, cool. You're like, you suffer from anxiety. Cool. Let's not teach you how to breathe. Let's like put you on some like antidepressants.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like you're like, oh my gosh. But no, so I was diagnosed then, which was in, it was cool to like go, oh, that's why in school certain things, or that's why like learning this way is hard. But I also appreciated not learning early because I didn't feel like I was able to look back and go, cool, there's like a superpower in there. Cause clearly certain things are hard, but other things are easy as opposed to like pre-labeling it before I was blessed to find some gifts.
Yeah, right. Dude. Cool. Yeah. I didn't find out I was dyslexic until I became a mailman. They really should scream for that, dude. There's a lot of angry people in Vancouver getting the wrong mail. It happens all the time. This isn't mine. Somebody coming running down the street. This isn't mine. I'm like, oh, fuck. I chose the wrong career, man.
Well, I mean, for me, even TV, like, my reading is better now, but I remember doing teleprompter and like reading live and sounding normal, I couldn't do. Right. That's like a tough, like you're choosing a career where you got to read teleprompter, but you can't read really. Like, oh, wow. It's, right. Like it's like, I mean, those things.
Like imposter syndrome, like supreme, right? Would that have given you?
Well, I don't even know if it's imposter syndrome. It's just like, fuck.
You're like, I'm not supposed to be
doing you're like, this. What am I doing? Yeah. Here, right? Yeah. It's kind of like, no, I mean, if it's live and you're just reacting, that's easy. But it's good to know why that, to understand reasons behind why that could be, right? Because then you're like, cool, like, whatever, like, yeah, it's hard for me. I got to put in more work, whatever.
Yeah, that's dope. Yeah. Yeah. I brought up the imposter syndrome because most people that become pro snowboarder have it somewhere along the line. It seems like you didn't get it. Like that you worked your ass off and you were as good as you know, you're going to sponsor me next year. Yeah. It happened. Like, as opposed to like some people show up at the contest going like, why am I even here? Like, I'm not that good. It sucks. It's a lot of pressure. Why did I sell this bill of goods to this company that I was going to do something that I clearly can't fucking do? But it doesn't seem like you had that at all until maybe with the business thing.
Not that, so for snowboarding, definitely not, in the sense of, I think because in my delusioned mind, I was still never getting what I wanted, right? So even for like my Burton contracts, like my last 3 years, I made a ton of money, but my base was like nothing. And then it was just all on incentives, like covers, TV, like, which is partly why I got into TV. I was like, oh, cool, you're going to pay me how much per minute of TV? I'm going to be on TV. There was no stipulation of like, hey, it needs to be like a snowboarding TV. It's like, oh, I'm a host now, right? Like, it's like,
that's dope.
All that was like, so for me, it was, you know, when someone tells you, oh, we're going to pay you X amount, and then you go buy a house, and like, actually, we're not even going to pay you 10% of what we said. To me, I never felt imposter, because I'm like, dude, like, I always felt like I was trying to earn it. And then in business, it wasn't so much, I wouldn't say it was imposter syndrome. I just always wanted to, like, and this is probably why I stripped away snowboarding. Like, I just wanted to be, I guess maybe it's imposter. I wanted to be legit. Like, I didn't question what I was, my capabilities. It was just, I liked that, I don't know, business felt more binary. Like, you do something, it either works or it doesn't work. Like, TV hosting, I didn't like it because it's kind of like, oh, cool, we like you because you have brown hair, right? Or whatever it is, right? It's felt a little bit more like subjective, where business felt a little more like you kind of do it or you don't. I don't know. I haven't felt it.
So getting back to the psychiatrist diagnosis, how do you know to go to a psychiatrist? Like, is there, do you have an episode where you're like, holy shit, I got to go see someone? Or is it like a judge says, like, you need to go see someone?
No. I don't think I've ever shared it. So I was at X Games. I just finished up the week. We were out partying that night. I was already doing drugs at the time. Some kid, it was actually a really weird scenario, because some kid came out to me. He's like, dude, he's like, yeah, you're a Christian. I'm like, yeah. He's like, oh, dude, blah, blah, blah. Like, 4 hours later, I'm like, yo, does anyone know who has some ecstasy? And literally, I bought it from that kid. I was like, this is like a weird universe God thing. Like, why? Like, it ended up being some bunk stuff. Mm-hmm. I like went on some crazy binge. I had to fly back to LA to host a TV show for Fuel TV. It was Action Sports Plus, to do a recap on X Games. My brain would not work. Like, literally, like 2 days later, show up to film live. Can't even barely say my name because I'm so messed up on drugs. But like in a, this isn't going away feeling, right? Mm-hmm. Like I'm potentially gone, brain cracked. Ended up going back to the hotel. Like, they were cool to like, let's try again tomorrow. Woke up again tomorrow. Could barely like be spoon fed. Just like five lines took probably like all day.
Wow.
Like I feel so bad for the people that I put through to even like have to deal with that. That ended up then, clearly, my brain doesn't work. It's broken. I have to go see a psychiatrist. And that's when she's like, oh, yeah, by the way, this happens when you're like 16 or like when you're 30 something. And yeah, you cracked your brain. And
wow.
That's when it was like, and then anything with like panic attacks and anxiety. And then that was the whole like going down that wormhole.
So you had never had that. Like, you're not sitting at the top of a pipe having a panic attack, giving yourself a pep talk.
I had always struggled with like nerves. Right, of just like
normal nerves.
There's
a lot of people watching. I don't want to break my legs in front of all these people.
Just, I don't want to suck. But
I don't want to suck. Sure,
but like not, you know, like panic attack. And then you're talking like, so then I'm planning like 6 months out. Like, okay, live TV. Like, what happens if my brain stops on live TV? Like, if you've ever done like live TV, it's like 3 seconds is eternity. And then you're back to like not imposter syndrome, but you're signing up for this. Like,
yes,
I'm the guy.
Yeah,
right. So then I'm like, okay, how do I like not fuck this up? Okay, you think you can take antidepressants? That's going to make me not like,
yeah,
feel this. Okay, let's try that. That sucked. Like, so I just went down a whole rabbit hole.
Yeah,
but it all stemmed back from just basically blowing my brains up on drugs. Like, I was having panic attacks. I was losing my mind. Right. I I also don't think that I had ever really faced some things to like help snap me into reality. Like it's pretty easy to get your money. You have success. Like it's pretty easy to start believing just some crazy things, right? Of like, right. Whether that's entitlement or whatever it is. So it's just like being able to get rubbed back at least the first little bit. It wasn't enough. I mean, that came later in life, but it's, you can get out there pretty easily. So I think she helped. It just would have been cool a little bit more of like a, you know, you can actually breathe.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's this thing mm-hmm. called like breath work.
Yeah.
And there's this thing called like meditation. Mm-hmm. And there's like, you know, you can take other natural, you know, remedies to help create that in your state. Right. Like it was more like, oh, cool. You're like, you're having a panic attack. Boom. Sign you up. Here's some Klonopin.
Yeah. Exactly.
Right. Here's some antidepressants. Exactly. You're like,
exactly.
So it's, that's where I it's horrible looking back.
Do you have any quick breathing things that worked for you? If you don't, I've got one.
I mean, I do like fire breath or box breathing.
So what's box breathing? I think
box
that's
breathing
what
is kind of like where like you breathe in. Like it could be any amount of seconds. Like
yep.
in 4 seconds, pause, yep. out 4 seconds.
Yeah. Like, yeah. That's the one.
Picture
I do.
In a box. Like it'd be 10 seconds, 20 seconds, whatever.
It, I mean, I was hiking up Cyprus and I got to the midpoint and my heart was going like a million miles a minute. I did box breathing and within like 30 seconds, I was like baseline. It
totally.
Felt like. Yeah. And it really, really works in anxiety situations for me personally.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I just want listeners to have something to go to if they're in the early stages of wondering, like, wait, do I need to go see someone about this anxiety, and knowing if you're going to plunge onto that conveyor belt of drugs, that it can be, I'm not a doctor. So like, listen to your doctor,
totally.
Listen to your therapist, do that thing. But there are alternatives out there that work for people for sure.
Yeah. And it's like, I think a lot of it is the mindset, right? So like, as you were talking, I was remembering of like, you know, my agent exposed me to doing yoga and I was like, why would I go do yoga for an hour? Like I'll go hammer on a treadmill for an hour. Right. Yeah. It was like a very yeah. like cocky yeah. type A, like, mm-hmm. and the same thing. I remember going to doctors like not that long ago, meaning like whatever, like 5 years ago, but like post career and being like, okay, so I want my Adderall and I want my Klonopin. And then being like, you know, you're pulling your brain in two different directions. Right. It's like, this isn't good. And I'm like, my attitude was like, screw you. Mm-hmm. I paid you my $90. Write me my prescription.
Yeah.
I'm doing me. Right. Yeah. It's like that. Yeah. Like, and there is an arrogance and a cockiness that now when I look back, I'm just like, oh my gosh, like no wonder you're so sideways, dude. Like the doctor told you like, this is like not smart.
Right.
And,
right.
And as like a kid that just kind of things that always worked, like, yeah, whatever. Right. So it's, to me, I think for listeners, it's like, if you're in that place of like, there's, there's amazing aspects of some humility and like trusting that maybe some other people have lived it and like have some scenarios that maybe it didn't work out and maybe there's something to learn there, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And nowadays, I think even just in the last 5 years, right, there's a massive amount of like education and like you can go on YouTube, type anything and learn. Like that wasn't there 10 years ago.
Right.
Like, you know, it's like your ability to have access to educate yourself just wasn't there, right?
It seems like from the outside looking at your story that there was a lot of camaraderie and connection for your adolescence, your youth, and your early adulthood. And then it got real lonely there for a bit. Like you kind of isolated yourself, not on purpose, but just the circumstances brought you to this kind of more isolated spot.
Yeah, I think that was the learning I needed to go through, right? As a kid, you know, my parents had a decade-long divorce of, like, literally trying to kill each other. Mm. We lived on the same mountain, so my dad lived at the top. My mom lived in the middle, 100 acres. Like, oh it God. Was literally my mom trying to, like, run my dad over. Like, it was just, like, wow. Stuff that you're like, wow, that would not really fly today.
Yeah.
So as a kid, it's like, that was BMX, skateboarding, and snowboarding was, like, the escape, right? It was mm-hmm. like that safe, like you said, camaraderie, some older kids learning, experiencing. So like that was, that kept me for so long. And then TV and then hosting and business. And then when things started to implode, you're right. Cause like number one, you're doing drugs. You're, you know, relationships are falling apart as through business. Like before you know it, you're like, you're literally a single unit, right? And every aspect of life was camaraderie. It was team. It was shared passions. But I think, and then I'm in Austin delivering food for DoorDash. Brain doesn't work because I just got off Klonopin. I'm trying to get sober finally for rehab, right? Like all these things, but it was still a magical time when I look back, because I can, number one, see how people don't make it out. Like 100%. My brother saved me because he had a place for me to go live. If it wasn't for that, like, I would have been done. Like, so like, it's very humbling, and you can see the blessings and you can have the gratitude. And even just coming off Klonopin slowed my brain enough to not want to be doing drugs, right? It was like, my brain couldn't function fast enough to be like, hey, I want to go do drugs.
Wow.
My brain was like, dude, this is like snail speed.
Yeah.
So within that, it's, I needed that for me personally. Like, I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy, but I needed that humbling feeling. And then to just literally relearn everything over, like, it's like snowboarding and that journey taught me so many things, but like, it's almost like relearning it, right? Whether it's business, whether it's branding, whether it's friendship, whether it's integrity, whether it's like, you're like, holy cow, it's like literally day one. But whatever, right? It's that's life. Like I said, I don't think there's people that don't make it through that, right?
Mm-hmm. It's a huge experience, right? It's a huge experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But even, I mean, like, I was a douchebag dad, right? Like, I was a horrible husband. So, like, if I think back, like, if I hadn't imploded things, would I still be married? And, you know, would, like, it all in, like, a negative, though. Like, my ex is still dealing with me and my kid's not having a dad. Or, like, I know that through all that, I can be a much better, like, husband and father and all these things, right?
Yeah.
So it's, you don't really want to go down that path to get there.
No.
You know? But
no.
Anyone but, that's going through it.
Losing $1 million, dude. Like, yeah, I was just in Vegas yesterday by happen chance. Happenstance, whatever the hell
did
that
gamble?
Is. Oh, yeah.
You did?
$200 out right away, gone.
Yeah.
Another 100, I'm like, this is the max. Because that's almost $500 Canadian. Gone. Just gone, man.
What'd you play? I
was in the airport, so I just
you're playing slots? You paid hundreds of dollars on slots?
Can you
slots?
Believe that shit?
You deserve to lose.
I know.
You're not old enough. When you're like 65, then you can play slots, and they'll maybe pay you.
You know what? I have a note in my phone right now that I'm allowed to gamble again in like 2 years or something, because I was gambling too much back in Vancouver.
I was going to say, I played there.
Not on slots.
I played a bunch there.
Yeah. My game is roulette, man.
Yeah.
Once you have a system, you know you're fucked. That's what it comes down to. When you have a system, you're going to lose.
Yeah.
You're going to lose, and you're going to lose every time, and you're going to lose big, dude.
Well, that's the gift of poker, right? Is that you're not playing the house, you're playing other people, right?
That's true.
That's the ultimate, like,
that is true.
Like, trap for people like that, me, that weren't really that good, is like, oh, I'm not actually playing the house. Like, I can win, actually.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
No, you can't because you suck.
But you can win. You could. You could get better. Like, Brushy's pretty good, I've heard.
Yeah. I think he's like a grinder. He also plays like 21. I don't think he plays poker.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
But it's, you know, I think as an athlete, gambling back to the profiles, right? Because like, there was a time when we were doing Full Tilt Poker tournaments, and like, the, you know, the online gambling was going on, and they were trying to tap into youth lifestyle.
Yep.
And hanging out with like Negrano and like gnarly people, right?
Those dudes.
And but they're all cool. They're all just like us, like, same. You know, some like crazy kids that basically the industry, you know, kind of like came around them and like was validated. But they're like, we all have the same profiles, right? That's why like it's fun to sit at a table and get that urge and like feel and like put it on the line and like, right? It's
like
drop it into the pipe or whatever it is, right?
Yeah, like it's I like see
you're,
it. Totally.
You're craving that dopamine hit. Now you just go on Instagram, like scroll, but.
Oh, there's nothing like losing $500 that you can't afford. Oh my God. That's the craziest thing. Winning for me is like scary because I'm like, I can't give this back. Mm. And then losing it, it's just so satisfying because it's like, I have to accept that I lost it. There's no getting it back because I can't get any more money out of my account. I'm literally at that. That's what's fun for me, man. And so that's why I have to stay away from it.
I think I have a post on my Instagram, and I don't post much, but it was one of like a picture of an ATM from like 2017. Like it's something like, you know, the night's over when you can't get any more out, right? It's like,
yeah, that's it. That's like, I have to go home and I have to face the fact that I just did that. And tomorrow my kid's going to ask me, hey, can I get a new pair of shoes or a haircut or something? And I'm like, no, we don't have any money for that. Meanwhile, I just spent money on nothing.
Yeah.
On a feeling that's horrible. It's the most horrible, awesome feeling. You know what I mean? Just like, I get so tangled up in it. I fucking love it. But I that's why I have to put in my phone. I'm not going to do it until later on. I give myself permission later on down the line.
Well, clearly you're recovered if the note in your phone works.
It works sometimes. There it didn't. I took a break because I was in Vegas, right? Come on.
That's what you always say.
No, if it doesn't work when I go back. No, it's worked for years before. Yeah. But then once it's...
But it's like any addiction, right? Yeah. It's you have to be careful to taste it,
mm-hmm.
right? It's like,
yeah,
you know, it's know when you taste it, it tastes good.
No, big time. You got to know that shit. You got to know yourself. All right, let's finish on where you're going tomorrow. Because that kind of wraps it.
You know, my daughter's birthday is on the 28th. My son's on the 2nd, you know, November, yeah. December. And yeah, it's pretty magical to like be in their lives and to see the joy and to... And now they're at the age where I can remember being their age, right? And like thinking about my dad and him taking us up to like ski mountains and like, you know, he had this like old like Eagle, I think was the name of the car. And like
Rad.
Going up to like, you know, Hunter Mountain in New York City and or like outside New York City and just like... Just remembering that of like, oh wow, like that's me now, like be a father, right? Like
<That's>
expose them to things. Yeah. And just, you know, be challenged by that. It's pretty rad.
What kind of cool shit are you working on right now? Is there some place that people can go and check out your businesses or anything like that that's going on right now?
I just started, it's called Dylan Agency. It's a cannabis branding agency. Right. So I've been working with a bunch of like CBD companies and cannabis companies over the past 2 years. I found huge medicinal benefits. I'm not someone that likes to get high per se, but I do. It helps with anxiety. It helps with sleep. It helps offset my drinking.
nice.
And it's like, it's a pretty rad industry. It just reminds me of snowboarding back in the day, like going to like, you know, SIA or ASR back in the day and just... It's a lot of creatives and like a lot of like nerdy creatives and innovative people and farmers that are like, they're just all out for the plant. Kind of like we're all out for snowboarding and to just bring kind of the experiences of what I've done in both snowboarding and business and like help with branding and strategy. And it's been fun. It was really rewarding. You know, it's growing a business late in life is different, right? Like you, failure is a different beast. But yeah, I'm super grateful. So yeah, whether it's Dylan Agency on Instagram or Keir Dylan, trying to become more social and put it out there a little bit more.
People love you, man. People love you.
I don't know about that, but.
No, they do. Dude, when I talk with people, the guys I've spoken with are like, that guy's the best dude.
Oh, thanks, man.
I get it. And I said it on the way in here, man. I've done interviews with like 150, 160 people now. You're one of my favorites every time.
Thank you,
there's
man.
Something just like magical about you. Like you have a really great energy.
Thanks. Yeah. It's all the mess ups, right? It helps ground you.
I think it does.
You know, and also like the sport of snowboarding was, I mean, it's a massive blessing. It was never lost to me even as a kid. Like I grew up in Pennsylvania, middle of nowhere, middle class, lower middle class, but like it's to travel the world and to be around other people and to be exposed to things and to have that ability to tap in Mother Nature and get lost. And like, I mean, it really is an incredible vehicle in so many life lessons. Like just, I don't know, it challenges your thought, right? So I think anyone that's out there snowboarding at any level, right? Like there's such a beauty to it, right? And I think it can be so much more than even we understand, right? And I think it's looking back, right? It's kind of like the relationships that were built. I mean, I just have so much to be grateful for.
Yeah, that's sick. Well, I'm going to work on powder core to bring back like a 12-foot pipe or a 14-foot perfect, you know, like get the pipe grinders out there, pipe dragons, make a perfect 14-foot pipe. Because I think that would be the great equalizer, right? Like I think these kids that are triple corking, quad corking these days, if they had to ride a 12-foot transition, there's no way they're going to be able to ride it as good as a 22.
Don't hate on the kids.
No, I'm not hating on them. I'm saying I want to see you out there competing against McMorris or something. You know what I mean? Like a master's class, like you and Terrier and Todd and Shannon Dunn and, you know, like the real deal.
The old guys. No, I mean, I rode the summer at Mount Hood. It was super fun. I mean, hood pipes are always sketchy. But Mammoth last year, the 22, it was as perfect as you could get. it was like the first time I hit an airbag legit. Like it was,
yeah.
I only took like 6 runs.
Yeah.
But it was like, it was good.
You get your blood pumping.
The kids have it good.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Sick. Oh, so you could ride 22.
Of course. Come on.
All right. All right. Thanks a lot for doing this, dude.
Yeah, yeah. No worries.
Great to see you again.
Yeah, you as well.
All right. Peace. Avidrad shout outs this week to Kira Dillon for doing the show a second time. The first time I screwed up the audio, so I vowed to go back and do it again. Thank you, Kira, for being so open about your experiences in snowboarding and starting a company and everything that's happened in your life. Stoked to have Kira Dillon back on the snow, crushing it as always. Extra special thanks to my loving and supportive wife. She's seriously the best. Love you, honey. Be sure to come back next week for another episode of the Effin' Rad Snowboard Podcast, presented by Vans and brought to you by SIA Productions.